lunch straggle in. I did want to note the appropriate timing of Sandra's comments preceding Bernie, who is going to, I think, among other things, talk about the privacy implications. I'm beginning to wonder if we have privacy anymore. But Sandra certainly raised some other issues as well, such as disclosure and dispute resolution. I was reading a reviewer who had tried the Allstate program and was complaining that she had tried to drive really, really carefully and still appeared to be getting dinged for left turns and right turns and things and couldn't understand why and ended up getting no discount in the program. I think it's also important to note that usage-based insurance programs are being used for different purposes in different parts of the world. So certainly in Italy, it has already been used. Again, this is something that Sandra referred to for accident forensics. It's been long been used in Italy, devices from Octo, Telematics, and others. And also for, in the UK, a very popular application in addition to usage-based insurance, is fraud prevention. So they have a big problem with fraud, you know, sort of ambulance chasing kind of culture and regulatory environment. And so you're getting insurance to prove that you really were hit from behind or you know, to cover yourself, to have to use that data in your own self-defense. Not the most exciting application, but it's created quite a bit of demand in the UK. So now that you're all here, let me introduce Bernie Birnbaum, Executive Director of the Center for Economic Justice. He serves as an economic advisor to and executive director for the organization, a Texas nonprofit whose mission is to advocate on behalf of low-income consumers on issues of availability, affordability, accessibility of basic goods and services such as utilities, credit, and insurance. And again, following Sandra, it's a kind of a perfect time for Bernie to comment. So, Bernie, and I have asked Bernie and also the final speaker, David, to limit their comments so that there is time for questions. I'm sure you all have questions for the panel. I have questions, but I do want to give priority to yours. Bernie.
Well, thank you. I wanted to let everyone in the audience know that you're all... You sure it's not on? It's
green light's on.
It's on?
Green light.
No?
Am I going to have to stand?
You're going to have to stand.
All right.
I need to close this down in order to put my thing up. Just close it, it'll do.
Okay.
Okay, so good afternoon. I hope you're getting nourished. I was getting a little hungry there myself. But I did want to tell you that you guys are all part of an experiment. And every piece of food that was put on your plate and every movement of your fork is being monitored, and your insurance rates are going to be determined based on the resulting database. And it turns out that it's highly predictive. So, why is the consumer organization involved in insurance? And I give you a little bit of background so that you understand the foundation from which the Center for Economic Justice makes its comments on these issues. And CEJ is involved in insurance availability and affordability issues for two reasons, because we think there are two essential public policy goals for insurance. The first is that insurance provides consumers with a critical and essential financial security tool. It gives consumers protections in the event of some catastrophic event, whether that's an auto accident or a hurricane or something like that. And low-income consumers need access to these essential financial security tools even more than affluent consumers do. So we want to make sure that there's availability for these products to the folks who need them the most. The second and probably the more important reason we're involved is because insurance is the primary mechanism for promoting risk mitigation, preventing the loss of life and the damage of property. And the way that that occurs through the insurance system is through the risk classifications that insurers use. the feedback that they give to consumers, the price signals that they give to consumers to engage in less risky behavior or to avoid more risky behavior. So that's why we focus so much on those types of risk classifications that either don't promote loss mitigation or don't provide consumers with the types of feedback that we think are essential for insurance to carry out its role as promoting loss mitigation. So that's why CEJ and most other consumer organizations, particularly environmental groups, have always been incredibly supportive of pay-by-the-mile auto insurance. Because, number one, we thought that a lot of consumers were being overcharged through the, you know, pay for everything at once for a variety of reasons. But more important, it gives consumers the opportunity to control your premium to a greater extent. It provides incentives for driving less. It provides consumers with the ability to actually take an action that has an impact on their premium. So, and Allen has actually laid out a lot of the empirical evidence for pay-by-the-mile auto insurance, a lot of the, not only the empirical evidence, but the reasons why environmental groups, consumer groups, and others are so supportive of this. Unfortunately, what telematics has become is not pay-by-the-mile auto insurance. What we have seen is telematics essentially replicating what we saw with credit scoring. It's become a black box model that provides relatively little feedback to consumers and is really difficult for insurance regulators to sort of get their hands around. So what are some of the issues that that we've identified in this? The first is privacy issues and the use and distribution of data by insurers for purposes other than loss mitigation and pricing. For example, are insurers using information from telematics and claims settlements when it's helpful to them, but not providing or making that data available to consumers when it would be helpful to consumers in the claim settlement process? I guess the other part of it is if you were paying attention to Robin's presentation, you saw a comment by Progressive about how many billions of pieces of data that they have about how many millions of consumers over a long period of time. Well, if you're familiar with data mining and predictive analytics, it doesn't particularly matter what your database is. You can predict almost anything. So are we looking at insurance companies through the use of telematics as becoming, in the next decade, the Googles of the world, who are collecting data and marketing it to third parties because you can develop a profile of a consumer or because you can market to the consumer? So clearly there's a need for privacy protection and limitations on the use of the data. A second concern is whether the offer and the sales of telematics has a disparate impact on protected classes. So insurance companies are generally prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, and they won't admit to discriminating on the basis of income. But if you can do that indirectly through a telematics algorithm, should that be allowed? So another question we have is, what has actually been the impact on communities of color and low-income communities of the offer and sale of telematics? Has it been offered in a similar fashion? Has it have the discounts been offered in a similar fashion? Third, we're concerned about a failure to achieve meaningful loss mitigation because of this black box approach of insurers collecting data but giving very limited information back to consumers. Again, Robin talked about behavioral change, but if at the end of the day you give somebody information for 6 months, they give you a report card that gives you very generic results, how does that enable you in real time to change your behavior in a way that actually reduces the likelihood of a claim? Fourth, we want to make sure that the use of telematics is not merely another data mining exercise, the way credit scoring was and penalizing consumers not because of driving behavior but because of where and when they drive as a function of work and housing segregation. Housing segregation is a reality in our country. So do we want to, you know, do we know if the use of telematics is simply reflecting and replicating that same type of discrimination? And finally, our concern is that there's been little regulatory scrutiny to date. The NAIC, in the similar fashion to credit scoring, hasn't really done anything on this issue when, in our view, it cries out for some standards. So my good friend Dave Snyder is going to follow me, and if he makes the points that he usually makes, he's going to talk about the need for insurance companies to be able to innovate. And we certainly agree with that. The concern that we have is that innovation, the ability to innovate, isn't a code word for deregulation and a lack of oversight. We've seen what unfettered innovation can do. We saw the abuses with credit scoring in the late 90s and the early 2000s. We've seen how insurers have tapped all sorts of databases. For example, using inquiries when a consumer contacts his or her insurance company to ask about coverage and having that entered into the CLUE database as a claim. So we've seen how innovation can be detrimental to consumers as well as helpful. So the things that we would like to see, the recommendations, we'd like to see the NAIC and states establish data ownership and privacy standards. It should be absolutely clear that the data that are collected by insurers is the consumer's data, and that other than the specific uses that the consumer agrees to allow the insurance company to use it for, the insurance company may not use it for anything else. It seems pretty basic. Establish standards for permitted and prohibited uses of the consumer data. You know, the data shouldn't be allowed to be used for third-party marketing activities unless the consumer opts into such activities. Regulators should collect and analyze granular data on the offers and sales of UBI related to the prohibited risk classification factors, including race and income. In addition, regulators should require insurers, when they're doing their generalized linear models — these are the statistical models which put a lot of variables on one side in order to get some output on the other side — regulators should require insurers to use variables for race and income on the independent variable side so that those factors are controlled for, so that the other factors are statistically isolated from race and income. Fourth, there should be established standards for disclosure of telematic results and rating programs to ensure that consumers receive the feedback necessary to achieve the promise of lower claims. Fifth, regulators need to replicate some of the analyses presented by insurers in summary form. So again, in Robin's presentation, you saw the types of things that are presented to regulators. You see a chart showing a lift in claim costs. We've seen that in credit scoring. Regulators need to dig down and get at that. They need to replicate that to verify it. They need to make sure that there aren't factors that were omitted that were important to regulators but not as important to insurers. And finally, we need to stop the fiction of discounts only unless and until rating factors can be associated with lower overall claim costs and not simply a redistribution of income. The fact that insurers offer this as a discount doesn't mean that some other people aren't paying more for it. We know that, for example, when you put an anti-theft device in your vehicle, that's a discount that pays for itself through lower claim costs, and nobody else has to pay more. But with credit scoring, when you get a discount, somebody else is paying more, even if that company only offers it a discount. Because in order to only offer something like credit scoring at a discount, they have to raise their base rate. So anybody who knows anything about rating and actuarial understanding of this knows that there's no free lunch when it comes to discounts unless there's demonstrable loss mitigation with that particular event. So I don't understand why regulators allow companies to make these claims when they should know that it's not true. So that's my spiel, and I will let Dave give his.